Welcome to this episode of the Circle of the Panda podcast. Our guest on this episode is Alex Evers. Alex is a martial artist of the level that very few ever get to. He also owns two martial arts studios and is the director at two business incubators in Oklahoma. This episode, we talk about leadership, what is a business incubator, and faith in business, along with several other key points. Listen in. I know you will learn a lot from Alex Evers. Alex, thank you so much for being on this episode with me. I appreciate it.
Hey, I appreciate you having me.
It has been a long time, too long, and we have some history together. And This is one of those recordings that is coming at a perfect time. You know, I don't know if you've ever experienced that in your life, as where you're searching for answers or you're just curious about something, and then there's a little delay, and then you go, okay, now I understand why the delay is, because there's some things that I want to ask you about that I think are going to be very timely for myself and some others. So thank you for being on here.
Always happy to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah. You know, I have another recording on another podcast that I did, and what I need to do is find that. You know, I changed this one because it gives us a little broader range in what we can do versus Soul Money Business. And then right after I quit Soul Money Business, it hit like top 10 on some list, and the numbers went up. But I'm still glad that we made the decision. But on that one, you went through some of your personal journey. And I need to bring that back out, because it is really something about a journey in faith and some experiences that you've had.
Yeah, definitely.
Since then, you now own two martial arts studios, and you are the director over two state certified business incubators in Oklahoma, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, keeps me busy.
Yeah. So you go from when I knew you were just strictly, well, I say strictly, you were running a martial arts studio. And now you're running, now you're running two business incubators, two certified business incubators. You're director of them.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to get right to the heart of a few questions, and then we'll just see where it takes us. You know, so there's leadership qualities. We're in the middle of recording a series on leadership and the importance of it. Yeah, man, I think so much is dependent on that. So you go from martial arts, which is, and I have obviously a little bit of a background in it, not like you do, but it's certainly leadership based.
Definitely.
And now you go into where you're a combination of business and martial arts. From a leadership standpoint, what do you see in martial arts that you took over with you in the business that's important?
Oh, that's a great question. And from a leadership perspective, quite a lot. So for those of us who don't know, I have a couple of martial arts studios, and my main demographic is ages 4 to 13. We have adults. We train adults. I'm an adult that trains. But we're primarily, that's our group. And the reason that's our group is because they're excited about martial arts. It's fun. It's cool. Superheroes, ninjas, fantastic. But then mom and dad think it's cool, because they get to hear from me, who's kind of like a real life superhero to those kids, chopping concrete in half. And I say, hey, let's make sure we're listening to our teachers. Let's make sure that we're cleaning our rooms when our parents ask, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Communication skills, patience, beginning with the end in mind, all these different. So that demographic is great, because they want to be there, and I'm able to instill leadership skills to those kids, which the parents obviously find valuable. They find value in the martial arts by themselves, but that's like an added piece. And so it's funny, because I might sit down with a group of 4-year-olds and we'll talk about, you know, I can say responsibility that goes in one ear out the other. But when we talk about, we want to watch a show, but our parents said we had to clean our room first, which one and why is that important? And sometimes talking it out is beneficial. But it's funny, because, yeah, I have these conversations with kids. Well, the adults, nobody, you know, the kids have to have the conversation. Mom and dad brought them. Mom and dad say, okay, go out there, have the conversation. But adults are kind of interesting, because nobody's out there going, no, JD, we got to talk about responsibility. You know, nobody's forcing you. And so it's interesting with adults sometimes, where you wouldn't think about it, but sometimes the kids are a little bit easier. But all those lessons that we taught, I don't know, 10,000 times, I would say all of those apply just as well to this work environment as to like a bully proofing class for kids. Communication skills, leading by example. I believe it was you actually who recommended the book The Servant to me. And when I read through that book, I was like, oh, okay. This makes a lot of sense to me. And I think a lot of people think of leadership as, oh, I'm in charge, I have the power, people do what I say. And really, and please correct me if I'm wrong, it's been a few years since you recommended that book to me, but what I got from it was service-based leadership, servant-based leadership. The leader shouldn't be, oh, I'm in charge, I'm the most important. It's how can I serve you guys to do your job as well as possible? What do you need from me so that you can do your job? And all that is super applicable with the leadership type stuff that I do here.
Yeah, that's a great book. And you lead me to another question. So the workforce these days, and now this is being general, I hear this from people, is more challenging. Some of the timeless leadership model business practices, I think, work anytime. Mm-hmm. I think they're timeless and they're based on truth. Mm-hmm. Some people will hear the servant leadership thing. And in fact, I was working with somebody who says, oh, servant leadership, that's so overused and that, you know. All right. So let's talk about servant leadership. When you have to have an accountability conversation with someone, because I think that some people confuse servant leadership with weak leadership and no accountability. What do you think about that? And you see examples of that.
That's very interesting you asked about that, because I actually had this conversation last night, so less than 24 hours ago, with an employee of mine. He's a supervisor, and he was saying, okay, so we've got a new employee under him, and okay, where's the line between friend and boss, and how do we navigate all this? And it's funny, because I always bring, you know, my base is teaching martial arts, so I always bring it back to that, and I want the kids to have a blast, so I need to be their friend, but at the same time, I need to be their dad also. And so, you know, as a dad, I'm sure you can value that, where it's like, okay, I want to have fun with my son, but also there's a line, and when we cross that line, I need to be the dad, not the friend. And I think it's a similar example. I need to be there for my team and say, what do you guys need from me? How can I help you be successful? Oh, we didn't hit this KPI. Why didn't we hit? Not in a why didn't we hit it, you're in trouble, but why didn't we? How can we fix this? How can we work together to hit it? And then, okay, so you go through that process. Let's say we don't hit it again. Okay, well, is it I wasn't able to provide what we agreed on? Did they not hold up to their end of the bargain? And it, depending on the situation, maybe I need to be the dad as opposed to the friend, if that analogy makes sense, where, you know, you just because you're a service-based leader doesn't mean people are walking on you all day long. It means you're there to help and be a resource, not an obstacle. But their job is to do this thing. If it's not being done, then he's taken care of, which is not a comfortable conversation. But it's an important conversation. And that's maybe why you might be in that leadership position, is because you can have that conversation, even though it's uncomfortable. And some people aren't willing to have that conversation. Some people aren't capable of having that conversation yet, and they need those skills. So I think that's being part of a leader is, I think all good leaders can, it's easy to do the things that we like to do, and it's hard to do the things we don't like to do. And so, if you can do the things, if you can have the discipline to do the things that you don't enjoy doing, that will really separate you from other leaders, in my opinion. Because it's very important that you can do things that you don't enjoy doing. I'm not saying do it 24/7 all the time or anything like that, but you know, that's important. Self-discipline is important. We can see that in everyday life. I don't want to do the dishes. Okay, well, I don't want to. I'm just not going to. It's not fun. Well, I mean, every person can make the correlation between, well, I don't want to, but I need to anyway. But that could be tough with difficult conversations at work. I don't want to, but instead of I'll do it anyway, it might be like, oh, well, we'll gloss over it. Maybe it'll fix itself. Maybe we can hire another person, you know, all these different things instead of we, you know, being direct.
When you're working for a corporation or working for somebody else like that, you can occasionally get by with, you know, I'll do that right now. Someone else will pick it up or that'll happen. Mm-hmm. And when you're running your own business, those problems that you're trying to look away from, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Small business owners are unique in that the bottom line affects them directly. Whereas in a large organization, you can go, oh, well, you know, maybe somebody will pick it up or, you know, I'm still going to get paid the same at the end of the month. You know, maybe you have to be worried about your career in the long term, but, you know, next week is going to be fine. Next month will be fine. Whereas when you're a small business owner, you know, if the leads didn't get called, then that's, you paid for the marketing, the lead came in, we didn't do anything with it, and now it's gone. And so we paid money to get them in, and we got no sale at the end. And that's, you know, I can think about it as money out of my pocket, but the way I would think about it is, I can't put money into my son's college fund now. And as a leader, that can be beneficial. That can help you when you're really, you haven't had a lot of those hard conversations, and you go, you know, they're a really good person, I don't want to, you know, but, you know, we get the bank's not going to take that when it's time to pay the mortgage. And so we have to be protective of ourselves and not throw ourselves under the bus and do their job for them. It's, you know, you have to have some conversations, and then hopefully it resolves itself after a series of steps. And if not, then, you know, you got to resolve that too.
What exactly is a business incubator? A lot of people may not know what that is.
Yeah. A lot of people actually, it's a very well-kept, fantastic, it's a well-kept secret. It's a really fantastic place. So as a small business owner myself, I wasn't really super aware of business incubators. So there's private incubators, and there's, for instance, I work at Meridian Technology Center, which is a career tech for the state of Oklahoma. And there's some incubators at all of those career tech campuses, not at all of them, at some of them. There's also private. So there's a place called 36 Degrees North. I don't know if you've been there in Tulsa. There's The Verge in Oklahoma City. There's all these different places that also can be incubators. But essentially, the idea is you're generally past the ideation phase. So you know what you're doing, maybe have a minimum viable product, maybe you're starting to sell. But it's a place to come in and kind of spin up the business. People in our incubator meet with myself or our assistant director on a quarterly basis. Depending on where they are, if they're kind of towards the end of their incubation period, maybe they don't need to meet with us quite as much, but I meet with some people every month. And we'll sit down and we'll talk about customer discovery or one thing that's really interesting about small business owners is they're very good at the thing that they do. But the hard part is all the other things that you don't do. So when I got into martial arts, oh, great, I'm good at martial arts. I'll teach martial arts. But it turns out 60% of my time goes towards bookkeeping and insurance, and hey, this instructor didn't show up and that person's teaching the move wrong, and suddenly I'm not doing any of that. And so I might have an engineer that's got this incredible intellectual property, great idea, but maybe doesn't have the skill set to get financing for a $2 million project. Okay, who do we need to introduce them to? They might be super uncomfortable in a meeting with a lot of bankers or with a VC or an angel. And I say, okay, so here's the goal. Here's what we're trying to do. Let's think about it from their perspective. What's going to get them to say yes versus what's not. And so the consulting is a big part of being in the incubator, but they have physical spaces here. So we have furnished offices. We might, if you're creating a software, an office space might be perfect for you. We have quite a few people here that are creating physical things. So we have a company that manufactures autoclaves. We have a drone company. We have a couple R&D companies, and so they have 800 plus square foot spaces where they're doing light manufacturing, putting items together. We have a company that just came in about a month ago, and they have their minimum viable product, and they got a purchase order for 75,000 of them. And it's like, okay, we know how to make 10. How do we fulfill 75,000? And then hopefully it takes off. And how do we sustain, you know, producing a million at a time? That kind of thing. So really helping those small businesses get going. And then the idea is, we're not trying to keep them here forever. They're hopefully here for 2-3 years, maybe 4 years. And then we would encourage them and help them find a property in town, which is going to create jobs, economic development, essentially, is kind of the goal. We want more companies with good paying jobs. sales tax, property tax, all that kind of good stuff, just for the betterment of the community.
You mentioned something that we're using in the company that I work with, MVP. I wish I'd known about that. I wish I'd known about that. But even back in the corporate world, I think I kind of stumbled across it every once in a while. I didn't know what it was. But describe what that is. That's it's based on a book that someone wrote, right? MVP, minimum viable product.
Yeah. So minimum viable product. Yeah. I haven't read the book, so maybe you can recommend that to me after. But so essentially, a lot of times we might be looking for the perfect product. I'm going to get all these features. And you know, let's say you have a software and it's for engineers. But you want to make it perfect. You want to do this. You want to do that. You want to do this, all these different things. And it might take you years to get it figured out. Well, that's not necessarily a minimum viable product. What can you make that is the closest version of what you want, but you can actually sell it, you can get it rolling. So you might make a version that has half as many features, a quarter as many features, but it serves a core purpose, and you'll be able to get revenue in, and even more important, in a lot of cases, customer feedback. So I actually have a software company here. They're trying to do all these different things. And on this last part of the project, they keep hitting a brick wall. And so I need to go talk to this organization, hit a brick wall. Okay, I'll talk to this organization, hit a brick wall. Well, we had a realization, wait, the product will still work without this last thing. It's not perfect, but it will still work. Let's see if we can spin it out. We'll try and get 10 people to start using it. Get some feedback. What do you like? What do you not like? And then when we get this figured out, fantastic. Now we can add it in. That's great. But in the meantime, it creates a revenue stream, creates some feedback so the product can get better, can help the business start as opposed to being a cash suck. It can kind of help start things rolling. So generally, after the ideation phase, you've got an idea, you kind of are figuring out, okay, is there going to be a customer base? You know, am I solving a problem that nobody needs solved? Things like that. After that kind of step, the next step is, okay, let's get together a minimum viable product, see if it tests the way we thought it was going to, see if we can get some sales going, and then we can continue kind of beefing it up from there.
You mentioned software, and then you mentioned a couple other areas. I've kind of learned that we're not going to really launch anything without using that process. It's that important. We have a couple of things rolling out, and you would normally think, well, how does MVP apply to that? What are you going to put out there? Get the group, see if they're interested, and then get that feedback loop going. Mm-hmm. I haven't verified this, but somebody said that that's what the Tesla, Elon Musk did. They said, now I got to verify this part, but it's important enough to mention the concept. Rather than go and build all these electronic cars, supposedly he built a website, which is relatively inexpensive, and then took a deposit from people of $1,000 of those interested in electronic car. I haven't verified they actually did it, but
that's the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't verified either, but I think that is the case. I know with like the Cybertruck, love it or hate it, I believe they said, hey, we're going to have it out at this time, hopefully. And if you want to be one of the first people to get it, you can put a deposit down. And then we're going to go in that queue order when we eventually get it spun up and ready to go. And that's, you know, that's a way to get financing to continue to run the company, to kind of get things rolling, as opposed to if you did the opposite. Okay, now we're going to be doing R&D and we're going to be doing all these different things for, you know, a couple of years with zero incoming revenue. And also, you got to think there's a little bit of a marketing benefit to that as well. It's out there. It's exciting. Now, you know, you still have to make a choice if you feel like that's the best thing for your company. But that's a very interesting situation. You didn't even have an MVP yet. But, okay, how can we kind of get the ball rolling a little bit? Instead of waiting for everything to be perfect, you go, okay, I got to get 100 podcasts, perfect, polished up, pretty, graphics, got to get this huge email list. And if you do that, who knows if it's ever going to get done, or you can get going. Which I feel like a lot of people that I've spoken to and listened to and read about are like, okay, it's not perfect. Let's take the first step and let's see if we can get to step two and step three and step four instead of waiting for it to be perfect.
I keep saying this on a couple of things we've mentioned, but I wish I had known that sooner, because you try something, it doesn't work. You go, or you want to get it perfect. That kind of cuts, it removes the ego on either side of it.
Yeah.
You know, you know, you get that ego feed from either no one buys or listens, or you get the other side to where you're super excited about it and you just toss a whole lot of money in it. And you know, it's that's a great.
Yeah, that feedback is very good, because then you're not, just like you said, it's not tossing a whole bunch of money at it and then hoping, crossing our fingers, it takes off. Sometimes you can find out early on if a project isn't as good as you thought it was, just running it that way.
Mm-hmm. I hate to focus on the negatives right here, but now that I've failed a few times myself.
Hey, you and me both.
You talk about that's it is true what they say about those being some of the best learning experiences if you learn from them. And you talk about bombing on a few things. So what are give me a few things that you would advise business owners or startups on and say, be aware of these things before you be aware of these things.
Yeah, I would, I've got a couple things. So probably the first thing would be customer discovery. So you're in the ideation phase. You think, hey, I've got this idea, it might be good. Actually physically talking to people. We call them interviews. It could be 10 minutes, could be 30 minutes. And you're finding people that are in that space or potential customers, and just literally just telling them what your product is, how it would work, and see what their feedback is. And sometimes I've been on the receiving end of a lot of those interviews lately where people talk with me and they go, there's this or that. ICOR is a fantastic program that the OSU Innovation Foundation, right across the fence from me, they do ICOR. And I might talk with a couple of businesses and they're kind of in the ideation phase, and I might say something and it sparks a whole different thing for them where it's like, oh, hey, I didn't even think about that industry or that market. Or, but then also sometimes you might talk to somebody and you might go, you know, I don't know if I'm the customer, or I don't know if that would work for me. And that's valuable feedback from them. Just like we were talking about, it's much better to find out now than to put a whole bunch of money into it. And then you go, oh, hey, I'm solving a problem that, you know, two people have, not 100,000 people have. So customer discovery and getting out there and talking to people, I would say is super important. What else? I would also highly recommend to small business owners to find somebody who's either in your space or adjacent to your space. Find somebody whose business you admire. So maybe I'm into selling windows and I go to a national conference for builders, and there's a guy that sells siding, and I look at his company, I'm like, man, that guy's got it figured out. It appears that way, at least. You know, I know he's got 50, 100 employees, they sell nationally, they've got the distributor figured out, all this kind of stuff. And that guy's not threatened by me. and going up and saying, you know, hey, can I buy you lunch? Can I buy you a coffee? And asking a few questions. For me early on, I had my first martial arts studio at 22, and I went to, there's a convention called MIA, Martial Arts Industry Association. And I'm sitting at a conference. The guy talking is this incredible martial artist, has this amazing martial arts school in San Francisco, California. And it would be very easy for me to go, well, he's in San Francisco, of course he's going to be successful. I'm in Stillwater, Oklahoma. How is that possible? Or very fortunately, what happened is I bumped into him at breakfast the next day. And I was like, oh, I have some family out there. I'd love to, next time I'm out there, could I come visit? Oh, yeah, sure. Friends on Facebook. 6 months later, I'm in San Francisco and I shoot him a message. And I say, hey, I'd love to come by and check it out. Are you going to be there at all? And he said, oh, I'm actually going to be there this afternoon. Come by. I come by. There's a sushi place across the street. I say, hey, can I buy you lunch? We go over there. And unbeknownst to him, I had about 2 pages worth of questions just in case it came up. And he helped my learning curve by probably 2 or 3 years by saying, ooh, you know, we tried that and that didn't work because of this. Or have you thought about this? Maybe that might be a problem. Or have you tried talking with the PTAs to get in with the teachers, because of the teachers are saying, hey, this place is pretty great. It's helping our students do their homework and not be as combative at home. You know, all these different ideas that I wouldn't have thought of. So if you can find somebody that's been there. Now, if you're trying to find, you know, if I've got a martial arts studio and there's a guy 2 doors down that has a martial arts studio, he probably doesn't want to tell me about all of his secrets. But industry adjacent or a different town, or it could just be a different business, but you admire what they're doing and how they're doing it. And I personally, just me, but I personally, those people that are successful and doing well, when you humble yourself and you say, hey, I'm really trying to figure this out, you know, it would mean a lot to me if I could buy you a cup of coffee. I haven't had a lot of times where that's gone poorly. That's just my experience.
Yeah, you mentioned a word that you did not expect this question. It's so great talking to a friend, because you know that you kind of know that I'm comfortable tossing an odd question at you. This is not an odd one, but I really kind of want to end on this one, because I don't want to take about 30 minutes of your time, but
no, you're fine.
You mentioned a word right there that comes from a faith base. Okay, the role that faith plays, if any, in the life of a business owner. You have any? I just dropped you a big, deep question on that. How do you see faith in the work, in the life of a business owner?
That's a great question. So I can speak from my personal experience, and I'm a Christian. So for me, that was very helpful in my early days. I'm doing the best I can. Mm-hmm. Who knows if it's going to work out? It might go really well, or I might be bankrupt at 22. I'm not sure. And for me, being able to put that in the hands of the Lord, in my opinion, that was really great for me, because I felt like I was doing what was right. I was doing what I enjoyed doing, but I also felt like I was benefiting our students. I really believe that what I'm doing is building confidence and focus and self-discipline. And so I felt like, okay, this is the direction I'm going, whether good or bad. If I fail or not fail, I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And I was able to kind of share that load, if you will, metaphorically, with the Lord. And it's, you know, okay, I'm going to do the best I can. If I'm going to succeed, you know, I believe that you'll open those doors and allow those relationships and conversations to happen. And if not, I personally believe whatever God's will is going to happen. Even if I don't understand why it's the best, I assume it's the best. And we'll move on from there. So for me personally, that was a bit of a weight lifted off my shoulders, and just kind of accepting that, okay, you know, another way to think about it would be burning the boats behind you. Okay, we got there. I'm not giving this out. Like, we're going to do it one way or another. Either I'm going to be successful or I'm going to be bankrupt. There's no one foot in, one foot out. And because I burned the boats behind me, it was like, all right, I got to put in, you know, it might be a 10-hour day, it might be a 14-hour day, it might be, you know, whatever I've got to do to make sure that at some point when I have a child and a wife that I can pay the bills. That's my personal experience with that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I want you to hang around after, because I have some more questions about that. You know, what I learned about that is trust. And you described it, man. You get a look. I'm trusting you with this. Lord, I'm trusting you with this. And then listening to that still small voice, because you go, all right, I'm trusting you with this. Now you and I need to grow this relationship, because I need you to tell me what to do. And then you mentioned this wonderful word before that is humility. Mm-hmm. You kind of just learn that you have to be humble. You have to ask people for help. You have to pray for help. You have to. Yeah. So thank you. Alex, this has been great, man. It's been a pleasure. I think it's been a couple of years, and yeah, from my standpoint, I hate it's been so long. Thank you.
Yeah, no, same here. I really appreciate you reaching out. It's always great.
But if you'll hang on for me afterwards, before I do that, how can people get in touch? Can people outside your local market reach out to you, or who?
Please. So one thing that's really great about my job is I don't need to know everything about everything, because there's absolutely no way that's going to happen. And so there are some things that I do know a lot about, and there's a lot of things that I don't know a lot about. And when somebody reaches out to me and I go, ooh, they're interested in, we have a lot of intellectual property companies, but I personally have never applied for a patent. So am I the best person to walk me through that process? Probably not. But I have connections with the United States Patent Office and all different kinds of people. And so, okay, I'll get them in touch. So maybe somebody's interested in an incubator in their state. I'm probably not the guy, but I might be able to find the guy. I might be able to find the right person, the right government department, or the right private incubator, or whatever the case. So I'm more than happy to help share resources, however, whatever.
Okay, thank you. I'll put, what's the best way to get in touch with you? I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, my email is probably the best way to go. It's alexe@meridiantech.edu.
Okay. Thank you, Alex. If you'll hang on just for a few minutes, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
And this concludes this episode of the Circle of Panda podcast. You can find me at circleofthepanda.com, and you can find Alex Evers at the link in the show notes. And if you're listening to this on the podcast outlets, you can find us on the YouTube channel on our Circle of the Panda homepage. Thank you very much, and peace to you.